What's up there, good peoples? Cameron Norfleet, Center 21 All Points Realty, and I want to thank you for stopping by today to hear what I've got to say. I've got a great guest here today. You are really going to enjoy this. If you are a real estate investor and or if you are aspiring to be a real estate investor, you're definitely going to want to listen to this entire episode. I've got Adam Negri. He is a local real estate investor, investing all around the state of Connecticut. So you definitely want to hear what he's got to say. He pretty much gets into everything. He's a wholesaler. He's a buy and holder. He is a flipper. He does it all. Pretty much all around the state of Connecticut. So you'll definitely want to listen to this entire episode. Once again, my name is Cameron Norfleet. If you're new here, I'm a real estate agent with Century 21 All Points Realty. My specialty is real estate investments. That's kind of what I focus on. You will certainly want to subscribe to this podcast if you are interested in real estate investing and or personal finance and or small business right here in the state of Connecticut. Also, if you're not following me on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all those places, you're missing out. Put out a lot of content on my pages. On Facebook, you can just look me up right there. Just type in Cameron Norfleet, the Investor's Realtor. I think it's just like at the Investor Realtor or something like that. No S, at the Investor Realtor, something like that. Instagram at Cameron Norfleet, spelled just like you, the way you see it right there on the podcast. And YouTube, just youtube.com/Cameron Norfleet. If at the end of this podcast you feel like you really got something out of this episode, I would greatly appreciate it if you could leave a rating and or review. That just shows the platforms that there is quality content going forth here on the Cameron Norfleet podcast. So again, I got a great episode here for you. I'm not going to hold you up. So without further ado, let's get into the interview. Adam Negri, how are you today?
Good, and yourself?
I'm doing very well, doing very well. I definitely want to first thank you for joining us on the podcast and you know, just to offer a lot of your wisdom, knowledge, and experience in the real estate game here in Connecticut. I definitely want to thank you for that. Tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
Let's see. I give you a 30-second elevator speech to what our business is and who we are. My wife's an architectural designer, interior designer, and custom home builder. I'm a broker and property manager, and we own a construction company.
Cool.
So since 2013, we pretty much have been crushing it. We're working 6 days a week, probably 10 hours a day, even through this time right now, because we're rebuilding stuff now. And we've been really fortunate. I started out in commercial real estate 29 years ago. And structured deals for apartment buildings, shopping centers, office buildings, rentals, and everything else. And just came to realize that it's not the place you want to be.
Right.
No one needs an office anymore.
Yeah. You know,
Amazon's.
Yeah, that's I was going to say that's very interesting. You know, that you said that. I thought about that a while back, you know, just in terms of commercial real estate and how, you know, like you said, a lot of people don't need offices anymore. You know, a lot, you know, either you're working from your home or, you know, even if you do need office space, you need a lot less office space than you used to, because, you know, I'm a digital guy. You know, I have a lot of my, you know, my files and documents online, you know what I mean? In the cloud, you know, it's not like, you know, offices and businesses need a lot of this office space for their files and documents and, you know, so on and so forth. So, I know that certainly affects the commercial real estate space.
Yeah. And what I think what's going to happen too is a lot of the bigger companies that have the massive space realize that it's cheaper and easier to have their people working for them work from home.
Right.
You know, saves a lot of money for everybody in the long run. But I saw that a while ago. And retail was the same thing. Amazon was really just starting out when I decided in 2000 to get out of commercial real estate. And I was like, there's going to be no need for retail after this guy's done with everybody, you know, and now look at it.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
But
you're right.
Everybody needs a place to live.
This is true. So you only invest in Residential, not no commercial right now?
The only commercial we get involved in is more than 5 units. That's it.
Right, right. So commercial, residential.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's it. Don't want anything to do with office space. Don't want anything to do with retail at all.
Right.
It's a misnomer now. I mean, the mom and pops that I saw when I was starting out in commercial real estate, it was a job.
Right.
You
know what right.
I mean? You made enough money to have a job.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, that doesn't look good to me.
Right. And yeah, who wants a job? You know what I mean?
You love what you do.
Well, yeah. But I mean, at that point, is it really a job or is it something that you're doing because you really love what you do? You know, I mean, even me with real estate, like I enjoy what I do every day with this. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I really don't look at it as a job. I mean, if somebody asks, you know, do you have a job? Yeah, I got a job, you know, but, you know, even outside of that, I don't know. It's something that I really do enjoy doing. And I can honestly say I would do what I do for no money because I really enjoy doing it.
That's good. That's the important thing, you know. When you're doing something because you love it, it has a whole different outlook than it does when you're doing it because you have to.
Right, right. So you said that
rarity
that
among real estate agents, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Believe me, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. So you said that you have a construction company as well. Is that something that, like, do you market that as a construction company or does the construction company just kind of serve as an extension of your investing career?
It serves as our investment. Gotcha. We use it strictly for us. We have probably 7 guys that work for us.
Right.
And we work on our own stuff. Plus we have apartments, so we're always,
gotcha, always
in this
something.
Pandemic. We were fortunate. We don't have people aren't paying. Some of them just left. And we're like, right, I'd rather see you leave than stay here and hang out and it costs me money.
For sure.
We're redoing those apartments and renting those out, as well as doing the construction on the 2 houses that we have coming up soon.
Right. Right.
You know?
Wow. So what exactly do you do in real estate? Buy and hold, flip properties, wholesale. What exactly are you doing?
Okay. To be successful in this business, you need to do a number of things. You can't just do one thing. If you're a wholesaler and that end of your business dries up, you're done. If you're doing just retail and that dries up, you're done. So what we decided to do is we're doing rental properties. We have a substantial amount of rental properties. We have the regular real estate business, like wholesale deals. And we have our own construction as well. So we do a little bit of everything, right, so that way we don't get stuck in one place where we get, I mean, wholesaling right now, anybody's doing wholesaling and retail. I don't really believe them. I shouldn't say I don't believe them. I don't think they're doing as much as they say they are.
Right.
You know,
right.
There's a couple of deals out there that you could do, but people are kind of skeptical to let you in.
Right. So you're just saying wholesaling in general, and you're saying that because of the pandemic and people are not going to let you walk through their properties, or some type of economical reason.
Right. I think it's more the pandemic. You know, people are afraid. They don't know what to expect. If you're walking through something, it's because it's vacant. You know what I mean? It's, or somebody really needs to get out. Mm. That's a whole different thing.
Right. Right.
Whole different thing.
Right. So the majority of your business at this point today would be maintaining and managing the rental properties that you already have, and those properties are here, all based here in Connecticut, or you have some in other states as well?
Only in Connecticut. We're boots on the ground kind of got people, you know what I mean? We want to look and see what we're up against, and if someone's really lying to us, we could figure it out because we can see it instead of being Ohio or something. They have to take someone's word, and we self-manage too.
Okay, so you self-manage all of them. And when you say you self-manage, is it just you and your wife, or do you have a team to manage all your properties?
Oh, we have a 7-man construction company plus of us.
Gotcha.
You
guys are taking the phone calls
on the job, cleaning up, painting, doing everything. We're doing the phones and we're, you know, doing applications. I had 2 applications this morning.
Cool.
So it's good. And our apartments are different than everybody else's are.
How's that?
take a look at some of the properties and you'll see, we actually get people call back and say, are these real pictures? Because we have, it sounds weird, man, but it's true. I mean, we got one at Hancock Avenue. It's a 4-bedroom, 2.5-bath, and it's got, you know, granite countertops, commercial grade stove, you know, double fridge, you know, so it's not, it's nice. It's got alert flooring, so it's rubberized. It doesn't have a problem. We put solid core doors in. Nothing for, we don't shop at Home Depot and do any of our work. When we do fix and flips, our baseboards are usually about 12 inches, and our casing is probably about 3 to 4 because we go and buy it differently than everybody else does.
Okay, so you buy
separate yourself, remember? Yeah, we actually have. We bought a warehouse 2 years ago.
You bought a warehouse?
Yeah, small.
What do you mean you bought a warehouse? Okay.
I had a guy. So that we could store materials.
Okay, gotcha, gotcha, gotcha.
You know, you could buy 30, 40 doors at a time and hold on.
Yep.
You know, so that when the project did come up, you're already set and waiting.
Right. Nice. Smart. I never heard of that. That's awesome.
And we centrally located it too down in Bridgeport because that's where we do a lot of our work. So if we come up into Newtown or Bethel, it's not that far a ride. If we're doing two projects in Milford and another one in Hamden, it doesn't take us that long to get there.
Gotcha.
Everything's there from lighting to trims to furnishings, all kinds of crazy stuff.
That's awesome. So now, like I said, basically what your business is right now, a lot of is just maintaining what you currently have. How did you get to that point? How long has it taken you to get to a point where you own the amount of properties that you have now? How did you get there in terms of financing? Did someone gift you a lot of money? Did you kind of grind your way through it? How did all this happen for you?
Okay. It started, we've got everything that we have now from 2013 on. In 2005 and 2006, I had was up in New Milford area and owned a lot of apartments, owned a couple of restaurants, had 45 employees, and then the economy overturned and I lost and gave everything back, which I was happy for. I built everything on a bad foundation.
Gotcha.
And from 2008 until 13, I worked with Michelle, who's my wife now, and it was her business of building houses because she's an interior designer and builder.
Gotcha.
And then 2012, we started to say, you know, now's the time to get going again. Mm. And we went back out and got bank financing, took on some partners, grinded it out.
So you took on some partners. I don't want to cut you off, but I'm just trying to get an understanding of the genesis of all this. So now you said you took on some partners. Was that like with your first couple of properties, or was that later on when you were able to take on partners?
It was in the beginning because I got shattered in the last downturn. I went bankrupt. You know, I got audited by the IRS. I mean, the only thing left was death, and I didn't achieve that one, so I figured I did okay.
Which is good.
Right. So, you know, I have all of this experience. I mean, I've had my own short sales that I've had to do as a broker because I had lost everything. I had gone bankrupt. I had gone through all of the stuff that I'd say some people are going to end up heading into because they're over-leveraged.
For sure. You know,
They're trying to get involved in a project, and they'd rather borrow more money than necessary, and then when the downturn comes, they end up with a problem.
Right.
So I learned the hard way. The second time we came around, we really struck it, and I took some partners on, and my wife, and it was pretty cool. They had good reception from the banks. They were willing to work with us, and it was funny because I went to the bank at Savings Bank of Danbury, and I said, you know, why would you want to work with me? I just went through a bankruptcy. And he goes, out of all your partners, you're the only one who really knows what's going on. And he said, that's why we're doing the deal, because of what you know.
Right, so gotcha.
We put everything together and we've been successful.
Right.
What's that?
It's a very good point. There's a couple things I want to dive into, and I'm trying to not forget them. But now you, one thing that I want to bring up is because you're talking about financing and how, you know, this bank kind of made a decision to deal with you based on your experience. Was this a commercial loan, or how was that?
It was a commercial loan. We bought we bought a 5-unit parcel in Norwalk.
Gotcha.
And we bought it. We bought it really cheap. I mean, painfully cheap. But it was well boarded up, and we redid it. So I think we bought it for $250,000 and put another $300,000 into it.
Okay.
So, and it had a great cash flow of over $100,000.
Right.
And we sold it last year.
Nice.
We sold it last year because Norwalk was on fire.
Nice. That's just something that I wanted to bring up for those that are listening. And that commercial loans, there's more, it's less robotic than residential, not residential, but, you know, like your FHA and all that, your non-commercial loans. I don't know how else to put it, you know. You actually have someone
compared to commercial.
Yeah, you actually have someone that can really look at things and make a decision, as opposed to, nope, this is the guidelines. This is, you know, you don't meet this criteria, so it is what it is. You can't qualify. You could actually have someone that, again, they could actually make a logical decision. And that's what I do like about commercial loans. Let me ask you this.
There's two differences, though, is that when you get the FHA loans at 3.5%, it's a guideline that they have set up, and you're stuck in it.
Exactly.
If you don't comply with that, you don't get the loan. But when all said is done, you're only going to get 5, maybe 6 loans from them.
Absolutely.
In your personal name. And you don't want to be putting your investments in your personal name. It's just not a healthy move.
Right.
Where you go to commercial, it's set up differently because you have different amortization schedule. It's a 20-year, visited every 5 years, and the rates are at that time were lower. Now they're not. You know, so there's an adjustment that's coming. You'll see it.
Right.
I'm excited. Actually, I actually had a guy.
Me too. Me too.
3 million and above, they were lending money at 2.98%.
Nice.
And I was like, can you like commingle a whole bunch of properties together? And he goes, yeah, sure. I don't care.
Wow. It's I love it. So now how did you, so with these partners that you worked with, how did you, after your situation, your financial situation, how did you kind of, I don't want to say talk them into, but how did they, why did they trust you? Why did they want to work with you?
Well, I showed them what I had done in the past. And then I showed them my new strategy towards acquiring properties. And we did one, and then we did another one so that they got the feel for it, so that it didn't hurt them or bother them. And we did all the heavy lifting.
Right.
I mean, we tenanted it up. We rebuilt it. We dealt with, you know, all of the towns for permitting, everything. Nothing to do is they put some money up.
Right. And, so that's all they did was put their money in, and and you did all the work.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Is that still something that you do, kind of syndications? Is that still something that you do now going forward, purchasing properties? And are you still purchasing properties?
Oh yeah. Well, we slowed down, and we decided that we prefer not to take on partners. But I think what's going to happen now is that I'm more open to taking on partners, but I'm not interested. It's a different type of partner, I think. I think I'd rather get involved with a younger person who has a construction company and let them do the heavy lifting. And I'll just, you know, structure and put everything together and bring it to fruition and either resell it or you can hold on to it, whichever way it goes. It makes a difference to me at this point.
Right. And you don't have to necessarily get into your specific deals, but how would you recommend that somebody structure that type of partnership as far as splits and all that? I'll use myself for an example. I found a great property, all right, and I want to take on a partner that maybe I don't know, or I do know, maybe it's a family member, maybe it's not, whatever, we can get into that later. But how should I structure something like that? If I'm doing all the work, is it still 50-50? Is it 75-25? Does it matter?
It's never 50-50. It really depends upon how you want to structure something. Yep. If somebody's putting 25% up, in my opinion, I think 25% is what they deserve. You know what I mean? Unless you're just starting out and you really need that boost, you know, then you give them 49%. If you're doing all the work and you're making sure everything's getting done and you're paying the bills and you're dealing with the tenants, you should have control of that entity. You know what I mean? So put it in an LLC, give them 49%, secure their money with a mortgage in the LLC, and you're good. You know what I mean? You can put it in a secondary position. So it's all tied into one tidy little package. Their money's secured. They realize they're not going to get burned anywhere. And you're able to control the property and make sure that it works accordingly. Right. You don't have to go back to somebody and say, I got this tenant. What do you think? You'd be like, yeah, I know what I'm doing here.
Right. And with all of them, are they owning equity in all of these partnerships? Or is there some kind of private notes going on as well? Or how are you structuring those?
For us, we gave them equity, but you can structure it. We're doing stuff now where we're giving people interest rates on their money, and we're securing it to a piece of property. Yeah. Nice. And it doesn't make a difference. I mean, you know, if someone wants to put all the money up, I'll give them an interest rate. If we're going to end up doing better than what we thought, I'll give them more than the interest rate. There's three different types of markets. There's the bull, which everybody knows, the bear, and the pig. And okay. Pigs get slaughtered and they die fast. They bleed right out.
Right.
So for me personally, if someone says, hey, look, I got $100,000 or $200,000 I want to invest, give me 10% return on my money, I'm like, that's a no-brainer. And if we hit a home run, give them a little bit more. You know what I mean? Right. It's not good. You don't have to be so uptight. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because then they want to do business with you because they realize that you're giving a little bit more or you're putting a little bit more effort. Look at, there's an old saying, you can do what everybody else does and have what everybody else has, or you can work as hard as you want and do all the things that no one else would do to have a meteoric rise. And there's a lot of stuff in real estate that people will not do because they just don't, they won't get dirty, or they just can't talk to people. They're not communicative, but they've got money.
Right.
So right. Do all the stuff that no one else will do. You get there way faster. You know what? We did stuff that no one else would do. I bought a 14 unit down in Bridgeport. I call it Tweaker Hotel.
Tweaker Hotel. Okay.
Tweaker Hotel. I'm telling you. Right. People hanging out the window smoking crack. People just hammered all. And to get these people out, oh my God.
Right.
What so an experience.
There were obviously a lot of tenants in there when you purchased the property.
Yeah, 14.
How did you get them out?
Oh, dude, we did. We evicted them. We paid them. At the end, we paid them. But when we first started, we were all righteous. And, oh, they're going to leave because we have money. And they're like, yeah. I wouldn't even give you the gesture they gave us.
Right.
And they knew the system. Down in Bridgeport, they knew the system. I mean, I had one lady that broke a sink that day we were going to court, knowing that if it was broken and you went to court and someone acknowledged that it was broken, that judge would be like, after you fix it, you come back.
Mm.
So we got to the point where we were actually calling that we'd have our 10 o'clock appointment in court. And at 9 o'clock, we were walking into that person's apartment with the health inspector down in Bridgeport, who is a really great guy. We were walking in with him and we were fixing whatever needed to be fixed and going to court in the next hour. And so when the judge got up and said, was anything broken? The inspector got up and said, no, I inspected it. It was perfect.
Nice.
So it's just some of those things you learn.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things that, you know, it's great to listen to podcasts like this. It's great to read the books. It's great to read the blogs. But a lot of things you just kind of have to get from experience. You know, there's a lot of things that you're just going to have to just kind of get the experience, you know, to learn them.
Now, here's what we do. This is how easy it is. We made it so complicated and so hard because we thought we were so smart.
Right.
Attorney Vinal Fountain from Hirsch, Levy, and Fountain down in Fairfield is your best friend as a landlord.
Awesome. Awesome. That's
he
great to know.
does nothing but evictions.
Cool.
You don't have to go to court. You can go to work. He will call you when he's in court, because in order to go to court, you have to go to a mediator before you can see the judge. If you don't have a mediation done before you go to the judge won't see you. So we always strike it. He calls it, let's put a leash on the tenant.
Right.
You don't pay, or you got a problem, let's iron out that whole problem with the mediator, get them to agree. And then when you walk into court, you go to the judge. Yes, we have an agreed upon agreement. We're good to go. And as soon as they fall down, you just scoop them up and throw them out. It's
all right.
It's really, it's so simple. It's hard.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
But where before we were fighting, going to court. I mean, sitting there all, you know, scowl face, you know, they need to get out there, bad people. And they're like, judge is like, right. I don't care.
Right. Yeah. it's important to know where the judge is coming from. Because, I mean, you know, we can have our own ideologies, you know, as to how we think it should go, and, you know, our what we call common sense and so on. But, you know, if the judge doesn't see it that way, then the judge doesn't see it that way. I mean, I don't know why somebody decided to start vacuuming outside of my office door right now, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, whatever. But anyway, but yeah, you know, that's very important. And it's also very important that you're working with an attorney that, I mean, if you're not doing your own evictions, for those that are listening, if you're not doing your own evictions, you know, and you're going to hire an attorney, it's important that you are working with an attorney that has done this, you know, several times in the past. I'd like to actually say multiple times in the past, because there's a lot to know. There's a lot to know that you have to know the games that tenants play. You know, there's a lot of professional tenants out there. You know, there's a lot of professional tenants out there that just know the system. They know how to work it. There was one time I actually had an eviction myself, whereas the young lady didn't have kids. She was in the house with her boyfriend, but they did not have kids. Well, came time for eviction, and she shows up to court with an infant, and she's rubbing the baby's head, the baby's crying, and she had three other little kids that was, you know, she's trying to keep them in control. I'm sorry, Your Honor. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm just trying to maintain as best as I can. And you know, and honestly, I looked at her, I said, you know what? Well played. I can't do anything but laugh.
Yeah, you got what am I really gonna do? You look at some of this, you know? And you're like, wow, how'd you think that up? Oh, because you're not working, you're staying in my house for a whole day. You got exactly. plenty. It's like a kid, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
kids exactly. got all day to figure out what they want to do to you.
Right. So yeah, I mean, it's you know, it could be a nightmare, and like you said earlier, that this is one reason why it's very important to not over leverage yourself, because you know, you don't want to put yourself in a position to whereas somebody else is the reason why you end up in bankruptcy, you know, because they decided not to pay their rent, you know, or several decided not to pay their rent. Look at what we're dealing with right now, you know, with this pandemic and you know, there's that moratorium on evictions, you know, and
this is going to be a long time.
There's a lot of talk out there right now, and I just think that it's crazy. But, you know, people just feel like, granted, there's this stay on evictions or whatever, but people just take that as we don't have to pay our rent until this pandemic is over. And that's just the way they see it. And at no time, at least not that I heard, at no time did any political figures ever say, listen, there's a moratorium on paying your rent. You know, that no, that's not what was said. What was said was evictions. We're not going to be doing evictions until X date. Right. So, I mean, but like I was saying, I mean, you have to be in a position to whereas this is not going to devastate your investing career. And that's why you can't leverage yourself.
Another thing, too, is, you know what? If you're a landlord, you're pretty much you should be a people person. And if you're not, hire someone who is, because we talk to all of our tenants, and we actually had a few come up and say, hey, I can't pay you. And I had one tenant. I was like, okay, and he had a 3-year-old son. I'm like, you got food? You're okay? And he's like, yeah, I got food. I'm like, okay, cool. I said, look, I'm going to educate you on what's going on. Mm-hmm. Whatever decision you decide to make is yours, because you're protecting your family. So I never give them, you know, I never make it seem like it's about them and they did something wrong. Right. And I just said, look, here's what's going to happen. You're right. You don't have to pay your rent for the next 3 months. But what's going to happen is in the 91st day, right, you owe me 4 months rent.
Yep. Yep.
And what's going to then happen is that you've lived for free for 4 months. Mm. You can't expect me to allow that.
Right.
Right. And you wouldn't expect me to not give you your security deposit back if you left.
Right.
I said, so I'm going to take you to court.
Right.
I said, and two things are going to happen. Really, three things are going to happen. One, you're going to owe me 4 months' rent that you're not going to be able to catch up on. Mm. Number two, you're going to end up in a lawsuit because I have the capability of hiring an attorney.
Right.
I said, and I will garnish your wages.
Right.
I said, and the third thing that's going to happen, your credit's going to fall apart because Governor Lamont thought he was doing everybody a favor by, you know, not allowing them to pay, or saying, you know, something along those lines. Mm. Okay. And then you're going to have bad credit. I said, you've got great credit now. Money is meant not to be hoarded. It's meant to be spent, you know, and if you get into that place where you have absolutely no money, I want to know, because I want to help you. I'm not here to hurt you. But we talk to everybody. It's not like, hi, you know, and you walk away and you put your head down. It's like, you know their name. You know what's going on there. I just had a tenant that went to go buy a condo, and they showed us the deal. And being a broker, I was like, you got hammered three times in this deal and you didn't even know it. You weren't represented by an attorney. You weren't represented by an agent. You have no dual signature or dual disclosure, the disclosure that you need because the other person was not only the seller, she was also the broker.
Right. Gotcha.
You know what I mean? So you don't have any of this paperwork, and you know, you're not going to be able to get a mortgage now because of what's going on. And so it's like, we just constantly give. It's not always taking, but you come down to the other part too, about the financing you were just saying.
Yep.
If you overextend yourself, and what happens is that if the market adjusts itself, you have a good chance of losing the equity that you now have and the property. You know, then it puts you in a financial tailspin. Take it from me, I've been there. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, the hardest thing is when you're a new investor is that you're trying to make a splash.
Right.
And the only way you could do it was with your credit, because you don't have any money. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So,
trying to get into too much too quickly. You know, I think that patience is extremely important. You know, utilize some patience, move methodically, that way you won't get yourself into trouble. Hopefully, you know, I mean, you never know what the market's going to throw at you. Nobody saw this pandemic coming, you know. So I mean, you never know what the market's going to throw at you. So be prepared for as much as you possibly can. You know, and not over leveraging yourself is, in my opinion, that's the basics. You know, that's the basics, because that will prevent you from a lot of the unseen dangers that lurk about. You know what I mean? So again, nobody saw this pandemic coming, but if you were not over leveraged in the first place, then you would have been, you know, you'd actually be okay. You know what I mean? Yeah, you'd be safe. You know, so I mean, that I think that that's the basics. So again, my opinion is, you know, utilize some common sense. Don't over leverage yourself. Don't try to get too big too fast. You know, everybody wants to be a millionaire next year. I just saw something on Instagram. You know, somebody said something about, you know, by this time next year I'm going to be a millionaire. And I don't know this person's personal situation. I don't know. Maybe they're at, you know, maybe they're almost there now, you know, I don't know. But I mean, just the thought process of, I'm going to put in some work today and I'm going to be a millionaire next year. It's just, it's unlikely. And you set yourself up to make some short-term, short-sighted decisions. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, because you're letting your goals get in the way of what's really
absolutely
your day-to-day reality. Here's what I don't understand. Maybe you can tell me this one. When I see these wholesalers, and we make crazy money sometimes. Sometimes you make a little bit. Sometimes you make a lot. Why do they post it on Facebook? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just, how do you, here, I look at that and I go, I wonder if that's really his money.
Right.
I don't understand that.
Right. I don't know.
This is a business of gentlemen and, and ladies too. You know what I mean? You don't have to wear your wallet on your sleeve. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And it's right. It's all flex. You know, it's all for social media and whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah. It's like, click it. If you made good money, good for you. Shut up, put your head down, and go get another one. You know, don't be telling everybody, look at how much I made.
Right. So let me ask you this. Going back to your real estate investing career, the beginning of your real estate investing career, what do you wish that you knew then that you know now?
Patience.
Awesome.
Really is. I mean, like you were just saying, it's going to, you know what, if you spend every day working on it and you're thinking about it and you're doing everything you can about it and you're studying, it comes. You know what I mean? And sometimes you get better deals than you would have 20 years from now, because you like look at it and go, yeah, I'm not buying that. I mean, right. I'll give you, for instance, I went and looked at four condos on the Bridgeport Fairfield line. The guy wanted like 360 for it, and I'm like, it doesn't cash flow. But that's what he wants. I'm like, all right, you know. I bought 14 units for 365.
Right.
You know what I mean? And there's awesome deals out there. You get stuff all the time. It's just, don't be impatient. It'll come to you.
For sure.
And find the stuff that you like. I'll give you another one. My wife and I, we bought the 14 units. Love it. It's an absolutely beautiful building. Have high-end clientele because it looks like a hotel. Mm. It's got sculptures. It's got all kinds of pictures. It's 134-138 Washington Ave. If you ever Google it, take a look.
Okay.
It's a 10,000 square foot Victorian.
Nice.
And it's great. But we own condos, and we looked at the difference between owning 14 condos as opposed to these 14 units.
Right.
We end up making 30% more money because we're not cleaning hallways. We're not, redoing laundry rooms.
Right.
And people stay longer.
Right.
So we were like, condo's a good way to go. You don't have to do anything outside. Nice. You know? Maybe as you get older, you get lazy, I guess. I don't have to do the roof. I don't have to do the siding, the windows, the yard. I don't mow or plow. I'm like, how much? 300? Here you go. Because you look at a two-family house and you go, okay, $3,600 a year. Okay, plowing's $1,200, $1,500.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, mowing the lawn, another $50. You know, say so you're close to it if you're not there.
Right.
You know, and it's you mowing it, plowing it. For the condo, you're like, you don't even think of it. It's not even a thought.
I hear you. So, what's next for you at this point in your career? What's next for you? What are your goals? Whether it be real estate or what have you, where do you see yourself going from here?
Goals in real estate will be to just keep plodding along. I don't think we're going to stop ever. You know what I mean? It's one of those businesses, when you love it, you do it.
Yeah.
So a lot of acquisition, a lot of wholesaling, a lot of retailing. That's a constant. We'll pick up more units as we go along. We did a change. We took in, we had the 5 units in Norwalk that we resold, and we went and bought a beach house that we're going to turn into a VRBO if they're still around.
Right.
Even still, you know what I mean? It's an oceanfront beach house. So it was like an even swap dollar wise. It's less money. So we ended up with more equity, and we're going to end up with the same cash flow. So then we did it with a different vehicle. So we're experimenting on certain stuff.
Gotcha.
And then just more acquisitions and continue to move. One of the things I want to do is we're starting to do take over existing mortgages.
Okay.
So
you're buying notes.
We're just taking over property subject to.
Oh, subject to. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
So you haven't
bought, to this point in your career, you haven't bought any properties subject to?
Oh, I bought a lot of them. No, I've done 3 this year so far. My goal is
them on subject to.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And And the last, when I get to my 12th one, I'm gonna go to one of the churches down in Bridgeport and see if I can't hook up with one of the ministers to find someone that we can do a donation to.
Okay. So, all right. So now, to this point, I feel like we may have lost some people. We're talking about wholesaling. People may not know what wholesaling is. We're talking about subject twos. I know a lot of people have no idea what a subject two is. Okay. Can you just kind of dive into basically those two strategies?
Yeah, I'll throw it off for you. Yeah. Yep. Regular real estate, as you know, I call it a three-trick pony. You buy, you sell, you lease. Gotcha. That's what most of the standard real estate companies do. Very few know how to do anything or go beyond that. Why that is, it's probably easier when you have 400 agents and everybody doesn't know what they're doing. So I have one guy that I watch very closely, and we do everything, every deal that we do, I know exactly what's going on because I don't want to worry about it.
Right.
The next one is wholesaling. Wholesaling is when you're buying at a dollar, selling it for a dollar and a quarter, $1.50, or whatever your number is, whatever you want to mark that property up to. And you're selling a contract. You're not actually selling the real estate.
Right.
Okay. We also practice, we buy, and I call it, what they call it, hoteling. We take in, we buy it, and then we clean them up, you know, just get rid of all the garbage usually, and paint them, and put them back out in the market for a good return.
Right. So just to expound a little bit on wholesaling, because, you know, just kind of went over real quick. So wholesaling is in a nutshell, we'll use $100,000. That's, you know, easy math.
Okay.
So $100,000 is the property's after repair value. Maybe we're in Waterbury somewhere. After repair value is $100,000. You as a new investor, as a new wholesaler, or as a wholesaler in general, whatever, the property needs work, or that there's something that property needs. So you're able to buy at a discount. We'll say you get it at $50,000. All right. You sign a contract with the seller that you're going to purchase it for $50,000. It needs $10,000 worth of work, or $20,000 worth of work, or whatever. But basically what you're going to do is you are going to sign that contract with the seller, and then you're going to sell that contract to the person that's actually going to buy it.
Correct. Right?
So I just want to make that clear for anybody that's listening that has no idea what wholesaling is. You're not selling the property. You're selling the contract you're selling the paper. You're selling the contract or the rights. You're selling your rights to purchase that property.
And I'm gonna explain something here just because I have an opportunity to. All you wholesalers out there, if you don't know anything about construction, this is an extremely easy way to give you up your credibility. Because when you look at me and say, this house only needs $10,000 worth of work, and I go, what does it need? And they go, a new roof and siding. And I'm like, new roof, new siding, so I'm sure the windows aren't any good either. And if it's on a Cape style house that's 1,200 square feet, that's 20 grand.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. So if you don't know that stuff, learn it.
Right.
And if you don't
before
know
what you go out there trying to put the deal out there and trying to,
yeah,
I mean, I don't want to
here's the difference why we
anybody over, but
yeah, you know, well, you're not screwing anybody over. You're screwing yourself over because you give your credibility away at that
right.
point.
It's a long
there's
term
two,
business.
See, there's two things that are different. If you want to be a really good wholesaler, in my opinion, you should know your construction costs and have money to buy it. Meaning that if somebody doesn't buy because they strung you along or whatever they did, you gave your word to that seller, you buy it. And and I'd say 95% of the wholesalers out there don't have either one of those two components. And I just, you know what I do? Here's a tip. All my wholesale deals that I do, I always circle back to my buyers. And I stop over and take a look and see what they're doing. One, because if I can give them a different idea of how we've done something and share an experience so it costs them less, better. And number two, I want to make sure that my numbers aren't, you know, so far out of the way that, you know, I look like a fool. Mm-hmm. I mean, I actually had one that I did in Bethel, Connecticut, and I thought the value was $480,000. They sold it for 5.25.
Right.
My construction numbers were on, but my valuation, I was like, oh, it's not going to be that much. And then they're like, we got 5.25. I'm like, good for you. I looked at my wife. I said, "Damn, we should have bought that one."
Nice, nice. So wholetailing. Let's just dive a little bit into wholetailing. What is wholetailing?
Wholetailing is where you go out into the open marketplace, and the MLS is a great place to be. Yep. And you can even, you know, when you're sending out your flyers and things like that, you're going to find a deal that doesn't require a lot of work that you buy. I did one in Bridgeport on Clinton Avenue. I bought it for $105,000. Mm. I actually just cleaned everything out of the house, which is just garbage and, you know, clothing and stuff like that, and put it on the market at $155,000 and sold it. Mm. So we made maybe $45,000.
Right. So basically, it's a hybrid between wholesale, what we just talked about, wholesaling, and retailing, and which is basically, you know, retailing obviously is what everybody does on the MLS. You know, you have a house that's already fixed up, nice, beautiful, ready to market, and you put it on the market and you sell it. So it's kind of a hybrid between the two. So you find a great deal, you put some work into it. And then you're likely still going to probably sell it to an investor, or maybe somebody that's maybe they're not an investor, but they're, you know, a home buyer that's going to do a 2 or 3K or something to that effect. Right. So that basically
always give them resources and always make them feel good about what they're buying and help them any way that you possibly can. And the wholetailing is really, I've made some crazy deals. Mm. I bought a deal on a Friday, sold on a Monday.
Nice.
You know what I mean?
Now, are you paying closing costs and all that on both? Are you actually closing on both ends with that?
Yeah, a lot of people are afraid of
the costs. Yeah, the costs involved in that, because you're having two closings. Like, does that affect your profitability a lot? You just kind of work that into your offer? Or how's that look?
I look at it this way: is that, you know, even if I made $50,000 and it cost me $10,000 to do all of the transaction, why should I be upset?
Right. Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It comes back to the bull, bear, and pig market again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If I could do 10 deals and make $40,000 and give $10,000 out, you know, for each deal that I did, mm-hmm. where did I go wrong? Right. I mean, I had a wholesaler that I was working with 3 years ago. I paid him $80,000 in 1 year because that's how many deals we did together. He was really, really good.
Mm. Awesome.
He still is to this day. He's just kind of burnt out.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, wholesaling is like that's a job, in my opinion. When you are a wholesaler and that's what you do, you know, and you're not looking to actually acquire any of these properties. You're not really trying to flip the properties yourself. You just want to wholesale. That's a job. Okay. You know, and I mean, you know, nothing to get, if that's what you enjoy doing, that's what you enjoy doing. But, you know, that's definitely work, you know, because you have to market to find these properties, and you're meeting with sellers, and then you're meeting with buyers, and you know, and you're just kind of making the whole thing work. Again, if you love it, then do it, you know, by all means. You know,
I like helping people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, understand that, you know, you might make yourself somewhat, well, you are making yourself somewhat vulnerable to the markets, because wholesaling is not necessarily the ideal strategy in every market, you know, if that's your sole, you know, strategy. So understand that. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, again, understand that. But I mean, like I said, you know, if that's what you enjoy doing, that's what you love doing, then it is what it is. But I can see how, you know, how wholesalers can get burnt out after time.
I don't care what wholesalers out there, the big gurus, they're fixing and flipping houses. They're hoteling. Because he's not going to look and go, "Oh, it's 100 to make 50. Oh no, I don't want to do that." He'd be like, "I'll buy it." You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's where the other part comes in. If you've got friends and family and you've got money, you know, there's so many different ways to do this. When you find a hotel deal, you know what I mean? You get a friend and family, they have $10,000 in cash. Mm-hmm. And it's a $100,000 deal, and you get a hard money lender that lends at 90. Mm-hmm. Who cares if you're paying juice on it?
Right. And that's something that, you know, I recommend to people as well, is, you know, learn all you can, because you want to have all of these strategies in your toolbox. You know,
not a lot of people have them though.
You're right. You know, but I definitely recommend, like I said, learn all these strategies, because here's the thing. You may set out to say, okay, here's this great deal. I'm going to flip this deal. okay? So I'm going to buy it and so on and so forth. But something might come up or whatever, or you see one particular thing in this deal or whatever, and you're like, you know what? I'm not gonna flip it. I'm gonna wholesale it, or I'm gonna wholetail it, or I'm gonna I'm gonna use the Burr strategy, or you know, whatever, you know. But you know, it's great to have a lot of different tools in your toolbox, because you never know which tool is gonna work best for this particular deal, you know. So just to everybody that's listening, learn about all the different strategies, because like I said, if you don't have what's the saying, to a person with that just has a hammer, everything looks like a nail, you know what I mean? So yeah. You know, and you definitely want to have more in your toolbox than just that, for sure.
Here's some real advice that people should take. These guys, wholesalers, retailers, you know, fix and flips, these guys are studying. They're studying everything they can get their hands on. They're right. Buying stuff from people who shouldn't be, that just really are not good business. They're not good at the business,
right?
But they're great up on stage.
Right. Yeah,
study for your real estate license. Mm. And the reason why I say that is, one, you know what the contracts actually say.
Right.
You know, you understand what the financing is, and you understand the legalities of what you're getting involved in. It's right. What is it, a 6 or 8 week course that's 60 hours? Mm-hmm. I mean, when I look at that, I say, anybody want to come work with me? Great. Get your real estate license.
Right.
Well, why? Well, if you don't know anything about contractual law.
Right.
I mean, I'll give you, for instance, I've been doing this 27 years. 2 years ago, my attorney looked at me and he goes, your initial deposit you put down isn't enough. So it's not a real contract. I'm like, why'd you wait this long to tell me?
Okay.
He said, you know, you can't put a dollar down. It's not really it's not a real number. No, I put $500 down. You know what I mean?
Right, right, right. For sure. Awesome.
And it makes it, those are just, you know, just a little things that you catch as you go along, but learn how to do all this stuff and get you don't have to get your real estate license, but if you understand what contract law is and you understand what the legalities are, like that broker that sold a condo to a woman without having any dual agency paperwork put together or having an attorney represent her, that's a kiss of death.
Right.
That looks really, I'm sure her intention was not to make it that way, but when you look at it on paper, it has a whole different look.
Right. Awesome. What keeps you going at this stage in the game? I mean, like, is it just the love of the game? What keeps you motivated when you have the tenants that don't pay, the tenants that kind of destroy a unit, you know, because they're ticked off at you or whatever? You know, I don't know your personal situation, but what keeps you motivated during the dark times, during the times that many other people would fail or just give up?
You know what? Some of us are put here for a reason. You know what I mean? If this is the business that you like or love and you're in, that's how I am. I mean, I say that I'm an idiot, savant, real estate and finance. Other than that, I don't know anything. You know what I mean? I could build, I've built, you know, 200 plus houses and stuff like that, but this is what I know best. This is what I enjoy doing. And so for me, I can continue to do this because a lot of people don't know how to structure deals. Mm. I'll give you, for instance, we just did a land contract on a deal for an investor on an outright sale. It was going to net him 16 to 20 grand. Mm. A year delay putting it into a land contract and letting the guy pay him more than what it was worth. Mm-hmm. He ended up with $51,000 before expenses. Mm. So he made out way better just with a short delay of a year.
Right. Awesome.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, once again, we're kind of throwing out terms, you know, that's somewhat high level, you know, land contract and all that, you know, we're not going to necessarily dive into everything. I mean, I'm sure that there have been, you know, things that we've said, since the beginning of the podcast that, people might have questions about. So, I mean, to that, I just really say, study and learn. If there's a lot that's been said today that you don't know, what in the world a land contract is, what in the world is wholesaling and so on and so forth, You know, and if there's something that you're reading on, whether it be Bigger Pockets or, you know, the local Facebook groups or what have you, you know, make sure that you take the time to learn those things, because all those are just basically, those are tools that should be in your tool belt. All right. With that said, I also recommend, don't suffer from the analysis paralysis, you know, because I know that gets a lot of people. It's like, you know what? I don't know enough. I don't know what this is. I don't know what that is. I don't want to make a bad deal. So I'm just going to hold off and continue learning. And what happens is, a lot of times you find yourself learning for the next, you know, for 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And then you're one of the people that says, you know, I always wanted to get into real estate, but you know what I mean? So,
a lot of people like that.
Yeah. There's a lot of people like that for sure. You know? So again, educate yourself as much as you possibly can. You know, there should be a point where you're like, you know what, I know enough, you know, to get myself in the game and not, you know, and not make any horrible decisions. So let me ask you.
You know what? I've been doing this for 29 years. Mm-hmm. I'm still studying stuff. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
To see if I did it right, or if there's a better way to do it.
Right.
Because when something goes wrong and you go, I didn't see that one coming.
Right. It's true. Yeah. So let me ask you, if someone wanted to contact you because they wanted to, you know, to learn more about whatever, local real estate investing, this is something that they really want to get into, are you available for that? If so, how would they contact you?
Yeah, they can call me. My telephone number is 203-994-0708. And I have an email that goes, it's just a regular email. It's RES, like residential real estate, RES1960RE@gmail.com. Just shoot me something, you know, and if I can help you out, I'd be more than glad to. I mean, we're also available to, we're finding out now that we've got a lot of investors because of the way the banks are going now. They're like, mm-hmm. Hey, would you consider structuring our deal? Because we can't really, we're just sitting with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, we'll structure them, put them in a land contract, mm-hmm. and you become the bank until the banks reopen. But one of the great thing about that is that once you put it into the land contract, then they're no longer going for financing, they're going for refinancing.
Gotcha.
Which is a big difference.
Right.
Because when an appraiser comes by for financing, he's looking at every single thing there is to determine what needs to be fixed. Mm. When you're going for refinancing, he's doing a drive-by shooting.
Right.
Oh, it says Colonial. I took a picture. It looks like a Colonial.
Yeah, good enough.
Yeah, you don't have to look at the inside, no nothing, you know, and right. You're already paying the mortgage, so it looks like you've got control of the property. Those are the little things that people lose sight of.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yep. That's what I'm saying, as far as what I was saying earlier, as far as it's great to learn things in books and so on and so forth, but a lot of the stuff you just learn it along the way, you know, just experience, you know, and that's one of those things for sure.
You know, we bought a foreclosure one time, and the attorney goes, oh, you can't buy it. I put it in contract before the auction date. And I'm like, are you sure? Because I'm positive. Let me call my underwriter for title insurance. He's like, oh, there's a 2-week redemption. You can do anything you want.
Nice.
Yeah. So we ended up buying the house from the lady, and we paid less than what the actual auction was because she trusted us. Nice. But I cleaned up. But we do too. You talk about before, you said, do you pay for closing costs? We pay for the closing costs. And the reason why I like to pay for the closing costs, because now I'm in control. I have both. I got the tail of both attorneys.
Right.
So anything that goes on that needs to be taken care of or straightened out, I'm available to make sure that it gets done, so that the seller doesn't have to worry about it because they don't know anything about it. Mm. So we've had stuff that's come up where we've had to go get additional documentation. We had somebody in West Haven 2 years ago that wanted to sell their house, and her husband died 10 years previously. Didn't realize you needed to do probate, you know? So we put her through the probate. Wow. I had another guy that was he was just an alcoholic. He was just a victim of his own self. And we found out that he could make more money by going bankrupt.
Wow.
So I paid for the bankruptcy attorney to bring him through bankruptcy court. Wow. So he could walk away with more money. Wow. My wife was mad. She's like, you paid $1,500 for that? I said, well, do fine. Yeah. You paid I'm like, but he could not. I'm like, yeah, it could happen that way, but you got to sort of have a little faith in mankind.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, flexibility. You got to be flexible, right? You know,
that's what this business is. This is a business, and a lot of people are looking at wholesaling, even in retail, and you're looking for somebody with one foot on a banana peel.
Mm.
You know, that's where you get your better deals from. You know what I mean? But you have to help them in the process. You can't just take from them. Yeah. You know?
For sure.
I had a lady last year in Bridgeport, same thing. We were like, you could see the water streaming down the wall.
Mm.
And I just looked at her with her son, and I'm like, you know, if you don't sell this to me, I'm okay with it. But you need to get out of here. This is going to kill you.
Mm.
And she said, oh, I'll be fine. I'm like, honey, you are not going to be. Do you need help moving? I get my guys over here with the truck. No. And then she was like, I want to move somewhere else. I sent everything to her and her son so they could pick a different apartment. I didn't get involved in it so that we could make sure that, you know, she got out of there.
Right.
I'm telling you. And it was wintertime and it was snowing and you could see the water just cascading down the wall.
Jeez. Wow. Well, okay. So as of right now, I'm sure that there are people that are listening that are wholesalers or what have you. So for them, I'll say, what are you looking for right now? What's your buying criteria at this stage in the game? What are you looking for?
We're looking for anything that really makes sense. I mean, we like smaller houses that are for first-time home buyers. Prefer those because you can get in and out of them quick. I'm actually doing a 2,600 square foot house in Hamden, and it's the cost is staggering because it was 3 brand new bathrooms that we had to replace in the kitchen. I mean, right there, that's 40-50 grand right there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, just to have the sheetrocker come in on a small caper ranch is inexpensive. There it was 10. Everything's 10 grand. So, small, you know, 3 bedroom ranch capes. Love Bridgeport. Absolutely love Bridgeport.
Why do you love Bridgeport?
You know what? The people there are really pretty cool. They're not as animalistic as the news makes them out to be.
Right.
I bought a house on Seaview Avenue 2 years ago.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm white. I'm going to die.
Right.
Yeah. Every neighbor. I mean, there was 1, 2, there was nobody in front of us. And there's 3 behind us. Mm. Everybody came out. Can we help you? What do you need? I'm like, are you kidding me? If this is in Danbury where I grew up, they'd be like, you know what I mean? Nothing.
Right.
They came out, they helped. They were just the nicest people in the world. And, you know, you have some bad, salty places, you know, sometimes, but for the most part, I did another one on Horror Street last year. Here I'm thinking, oh my God, this isn't going to be a good area.
Mm.
One guy came down, electrician, you need any help? Next door neighbor was upset because of what happened at the house. You know, I told her what we were going to do. She helped us. It's a nice place. I mean,
right.
Again,
cool.
So, Bridgeport, all of Fairfield and New Haven County. That's where we are. That's where we want to be. Nothing in Hartford County because it's just too far away.
Gotcha. Okay. And do you have anything that you are selling right now? So if there's somebody that's looking to buy something, even if that's a owner-occupied buyer or an investor, do you have anything right now that you're trying to offload?
I have a 4-bedroom, 3 full bath, Cape style house. It's 2,600 square feet up on Ridge Road in Hamden. Probably one of the better areas. And it faces the park.
Nice.
And we're putting it on the market.
That's a property that you rehabbed in and you're now selling?
Yeah, getting ready to sell it. Yeah, the kitchen's going in now and the floors are getting sanded.
Nice.
It's we're putting it down at $349.9. It's a huge house, man. I mean, you got a master bedroom suite on the first floor. You got 2 bedrooms that flank the other side with the kitchen, dining room, living room, and another sitting area. Right. And then the upstairs, it's huge. I mean, it's a full bathroom with a laundry room and a living room and another bedroom. I mean, it's huge. So, and it's all been cleaned up and cosmetically done. It's beautiful. And the other one we have is in Milford on Westway. 128 Westway. It's a four-bedroom, two-full-bath colonial that we're redoing right now. I don't know what the value is down there. It's kind of high. I mean, we try and keep a little meat on the bone, so it's not like you charge. I mean,
yeah,
if it's here, you don't go here and then work your way down. Usually right. a little below, or right. help somebody out, you know, and give them some money if they need it. And right. I don't know where the price is. I think it's going to be about 350, 360.
Okay.
You know, and it's in a great area. We're redoing that one right now as we speak. And but always looking for more. Always looking to find more opportunities. But those are the two that we got. We got a beach house that we're renovating. We let it go for the winter time because we thought it was going to be cold. It was beautiful.
Yeah. It was a nice winter.
It was the best winter we ever have and the worst spring we ever had.
Oh my goodness, yeah. 2020 so far has been something else. For sure.
I'll tell you what, I live in Reading. Yesterday it was snowing out.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And I looked crazy. At my wife and I'm like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. Wow. Well, listen, I definitely wanted to thank you for taking the time to speak to myself and my audience and so on and so forth. You are a wealth of information, knowledge, and experience. I definitely definitely appreciate you taking your time to talk to us. So thank you.
My pleasure. It's been fun. Yeah, and if anybody needs anything, just let me know. If I can help you out, point you in a direction, why not? This makes it easier.
Awesome. All right, so that's it for this episode of the Cameron Norfleet podcast. I definitely thank all of you for listening and tuning in. So that's it for today. As always, thank you for your time and make it a great day.